General Michael Hayden, a U.S. Air Force retired former director of the National Security Agency, principal deputy director of National Intelligence, and director of the Central Intelligence Agency. General Hayden, it's a pleasure to talk to you. You made some controversial remarks not long ago when you suggested that when you were at NSA, at CIA, had you had the opportunity to perform the same espionage act on the Chinese that they appear to have performed on us, you would have done so, no questions asked. What was your thought behind that statement, and were you struck by the level of surprise and controversy that comment generated? Thanks for your time today, General.
Sure, no, and thanks for the opportunity to chat. But that is detailed knowledge on millions of potential targets for the government's espionage service. Now, Jim Clapper has suggested this was probably China. That's certainly my estimate. So let's act as if it were China, just to make this simple. I mean, what the Chinese would do with that information is exactly what I would have done with it. I would have stored it. I'd have cataloged it. I'd have cross-referenced it. And even in the most innocent of usage, Francis, it's, you know, we've got scientists going to this nuclear symposium in Geneva in early August. We've got the rosters of the American scientists that are going. What's their background? Who's married? How many children do they have? You begin to build detailed knowledge of these individuals so that as you go up to approach them for that first approach to begin to establish a relationship that for you as an espionage agency, you want to end in a very intimate dialogue, you go well-armed. Oh, doctor, I read your paper. I was so impressed, and you did that. What? You did that as an undergraduate. Now that, you know, I've been following your career. And you get the picture, Francis.
Yes.
And then you begin to develop that relationship. Now, I've just described for you what I think will be the most common and the most innocent usage of that information. And that's really bad, but there are other darker things that might be used. I frankly think the blackmail danger is a bit overdrawn. After all, the government already knows this stuff about you, and so a foreign government might have trouble using it as leverage. I can't rule that out, but I don't think that's the original purpose. It's just this detailed knowledge, again, that I would have stolen in a heartbeat from a foreign government in order to enable American human intelligence, human espionage.
You told the Wall Street Journal your deepest emotion is embarrassment about the hack. Is that just because of how easily it seems that whoever extracted that data extracted it, or is your sentiment more complex than that, General?
No, it's pretty straightforward, Francis. I mean, what part about this didn't you get? You know, what part about this threat didn't you understand? You had OPM's own Inspector General saying that some of these systems were so weak, they should actually be taken offline. And that advice was ignored. Now, look, I've worked in the government. I know how that works. Taking it offline means that your organization becomes largely dysfunctional. And so I know the bureaucratic pressure to just stand up, carry on. But everyone knew these networks were weak. Everyone knew that we had foreign intelligence services aggressively pursuing this information, and yet it just happened. Somebody's got to take responsibility for these things, and so that everyone understands that this concept of, well, it happened to everyone, or what I very unkindly described as the Homer Simpson defense, it was that way when I got here, that's just not good enough anymore.
Do you believe that a lack of at least public formal rules of cyber engagement make a difference in how the United States responds to an incident like this, General?
How do you mean about what's your meaning of cyber engagement, Francis?
Well, there's a not to my knowledge a public set of rules of engagement defined by the Department of Defense or another organization in the government,
yeah,
as to when this happens, it's appropriate for us to do that. Rules of war, I suppose, in the cyber,
yeah,
realm.
So I think there are two sets of norms that we're still struggling for. And I mean that in a genuine way. And this one is nobody's fault, because this is really hard to do. Now, the one set of norms is what constitutes acceptable and unacceptable international behavior. All right. North Korea, a nation state, terrorizing a North American firm, Sony, unacceptable. beyond the pale, okay? A foreign espionage service stealing information from the American government, that actually is an acceptable international practice, Francis. I mean, that's what adult nations do to one another, hence my first comments about not shame on China, shame on us. Now, your second set of norms, what are the legitimate American responses to this? And again, your responses are going to be controlled by how you define the original sin. I just told you this is an accepted international practice. So my sense here, the response here is not to yell at the Chinese, but to yell at our own people and tell them to get their game up. North Korea going after Sony, something quite different. That may require a different kind of response, not necessarily cyber. But, you know, you need to teach adversaries that when they conduct unacceptable behavior, legitimate consequences are inevitable. And we need to create those consequences for those who work outside of accepted international norms.
It's an important and, I think, a noteworthy distinction, General, because one of your former colleagues in the intelligence community pointed that out to me the day after the OPM breach, and I thought it was an interesting perspective. That is, 30, 40 years ago, if we would have caught, say, a Soviet spy inside a government building copying as many records as he possibly could about federal employees, we certainly would have been happy about it, but it would not have been regarded as this tremendous crime that we seem to be thinking about today. It would have been treated, I imagine, in the way that you're referring to as, well, of course, we're trying to do the same thing if we possibly could.
No, and to be fair, you know, if we would have caught that fella inside the files 2 decades ago, we would have tried to get him and put him in jail.
Sure.
Because we had custody. And frankly, these attacks were happening from American soil, and we had custody of the attackers. We'd put them in jail too, but they're not. They're happening from sanctuary as far as the attackers are concerned. And so, although it's a violation of American law, it's no more a violation of American law than it is a violation of some other country's law when our national security agency steals their secrets.
How much interaction does Cyber Command have with civilian agencies to be able to give them knowledge and understanding, not just about the cyber defenses themselves, but the potential for the exposure of data like this? It strikes me that there's a gap between the gravity and value of the information that agencies hold and the level of protection that they seem to be offering and the level of speed with which they seem to be interested in protecting that information.
Oh, Francis, what a great question. Well, first of all, I think Admiral Mike Rogers is both the commander of Cyber Command and director of the National Security Agency, and his predecessor, Keith Alexander, his predecessor, me. I mean, we've been beating the drum a lot about the danger. So I don't think anyone could fault us for not ringing the alarm bell. But now you come to the second part of your question. What do you do? What is the something you do when someone's ringing the alarm bell? How do you tighten up your defenses? And here, Francis, we hit a wonderful conundrum in American political culture, because what I tell public audiences is that we as a people, and I mean that the big plural we, 320 million we, have not yet decided what it is we want or what it is we will allow our government to do to protect us in the cyber domain. Francis, the week this OPM breach was announced, if you just step back a little bit and look at the sequence of events for the week, it went like this. On Tuesday, the American Congress congratulated itself endlessly for passing the USA Freedom Act and thereby reining in the allegedly renegade National Security Agency. That was Monday and Tuesday. Thursday, we find out that the Chinese, likely the Chinese, have the personal records of 18 million Americans. The same week, we rein in out of our constitutional fears, not because NSA was doing anything violating American privacy, but we rein in out of our constitutional fears the one agency that has the power to actually best protect us in the cyber domain. It was like a morality play, Francis, played out over 96 hours.
What is your sentiment then? What is your thought as you see that happen? One could easily imagine that you deduced you got what you asked for.
Well, I guess there is some truth to that. I mean, we have allowed our worst fears to actually make us government less capable of defending ourselves in the cyber domain, because we've not yet agreed on the ground rules of what it is we'll let the government do. Francis, I'm talking to you from my house. Let's say you just woke up last night, couldn't sleep, looked out the front door, and a Fairfax County police car went by and put a spotlight on my hedges. My thought almost certainly would have been, there you go, my tax dollars at work, keep it up. Now, you and your subscribers, you go ahead and imagine whatever it is you think the cyber digital equivalent of that is, and tell me you're comfortable. And you won't, because you can't quite picture what that might be. That's where we are. Look, the most powerful concentration of cyber forces on this planet is between Washington and Baltimore at Fort Meade. And even though that is true, because of our political culture, and by the way, Francis, I'm part of it too. I understand the Fourth Amendment, and I'm very guarded about it. But because of our political culture, despite that great concentration of cyber power, we're probably going to end up with one of the least well-defended networks on the planet.
What will yield that clarity? What will there? Do you expect a defining moment? Do you expect an evolution? Will it be a congressional solution? Will it be the population of the United States moving in one direction or another? Or what do you see being the path to that clarity to give the governing agencies and the responsible overseers the opportunity to get to that point of clarity that will solve the issue as you just laid it out, General?
Well, first of all, and this is going to sound judgmental, Francis, but when we have these conversations, I'd like just to keep the adults in the room and those who want to make up dangers and make up threats and allege things that are not just illegal but physically impossible, that we actually don't pay attention to them in these conversations. So, and that, by the way, that is my description of the national debate over the 215 program, the metadata program. So number one, these are tough questions, and I recognize the other side has legitimacy. But we need to base the discussion on reality and the facts, not our subconscious's worst fears. So that would be one thing. I hope we make good progress. I hope we get better. Let me tell you a scenario, Francis, that I think really doesn't work, is that we fumble along on this dupe, essentially, digital bottom dragging until something catastrophic happens. And then Francis, I fear what we do is overreact in the wrong direction at expense to our liberties.
I hear varying scenarios, cyber 9/11, cyber Pearl Harbor, others like that, General. Are you a believer in the possibility of an event like that, or do you...
That's certainly possible, but if you go back and somehow collect all my public speeches on this subject, you won't hear those words. That's not what I fear the most. I use the line that if a powerful cyber nation like the Chinese are turning the lights out along the eastern seaboard, that's probably not the first thing in the president's morning brief the next morning. There is a whole bunch of other stuff going on, of which this is a subset. I'm more concerned about the kinds of things we have recently seen happen, Francis. The OPM breach, for example. The North Korean attack on Sony is another example. The Iranian attack on the Sands casino system that destroyed large volumes of data for political effect and, frankly, for punishment of the owner for his views on Iran and Israel. I think, people my background draw little charts here with two lines, and things really get interesting when the lines cross. And it's how bad is it and how likely is it? And I think where those lines cross, how the worst and most likely are the kinds of attacks I just described for you. It isn't the catastrophic attack that turns out all the lights. Possible? Yes. Dangerous? Oh, my, yes. Likely? Not very.
So it strikes me that, to boil down your thought process, you think it's more likely that a bunch of different attacks will sneak up on us and we might not realize what happened until it's too late.
I think so. So let's just catalog what we've seen. All right, so you've got the massive espionage that likely the Chinese conducted against OPM, and I've already characterized that for you. By the way, I'm less forgiving when the Chinese don't attack the American government, but attack American industry to steal intellectual property for profit. That has nothing to do with national security, certainly not national security as we see it. You've got renegade states, isolated states who want to reach out and touch us. That's certainly what the North Koreans did with Sony. It's what the Iranians did with regard to the Sands Casino. Francis, let your imagination run a little wild. Let's assume we don't get this deal in Geneva. Let's assume we all blame the Iranians for it. Let's assume we all begin to ratchet up sanctions on the Islamic Republic. A very logical, I'm betting almost inevitable, response from them will be increased cyber attacks against the West, and particularly the United States, to impress upon us our sanctions aren't cost-free for us. And if you really want me to go to a dark corner of the room, Francis, imagine our relationship with the Russian Federation getting so dark that we really seriously upgrade sanctions against them. And a man like Putin, in extremis, with his inner circle turning on him in a desperate effort to make us change our mind, what might he do in the cyber domain to impress upon us that our actions have consequences for ourselves? Those are my darkest scenarios. Not somebody turning out all of the electric grid east of the Mississippi River.
The Russian one is particularly troubling because we have a demonstrated history of that country using cyber to set the battlefield.
Oh, my, yes. Georgia, Estonia, the Ukraine. Yes, they do.
General Hayden, I want to go back to something that we talked about at the beginning of our conversation, one of the potential ramifications of the loss of the information out of the Office of Personnel Management. You talked about the way that someone might use that information in a seemingly innocent way on the surface would seem to be very innocent, and yet could wind up causing issues for employees as they become more involved in personal relationships with somebody from an adversarial country. What training is available or should be available to help people understand the bonuses and detriments of relationship building like that?
Yep, that is a great question. And frankly, Francis, one over which we are conflicted even within our own intelligence organizations. And this can be a slightly long answer, but I think it's very instructive. When I was director of CIA, I felt as if our analysts needed to say, drink at the well of non-secret information more deeply, to attend a variety of conferences, to hear alternative views, to match which with scholars from different cultures and different approaches and so on, and push them out the door and to make contact with folks. And almost immediately, my National Clandestine Service jumped on me saying, what are you doing? That's a horrible idea. Why? Because that actually also creates the environment in which foreign intelligence services can then begin to establish relationships with CIA's own analysts. And so this is, I guess what I'm trying to describe for you, Francis, it's a perennial problem made more challenging by the loss of all this data. My hope is that we're prudent, that we don't overreact, and that our response to this is not locking all the doors and not letting anyone take a walk at night.
Should government personnel assume, though, General, that someone who is approaching them and does the kinds of things that you talked about earlier, I followed your career, I respect your work, questions about this or that or the other thing through research they've been able to do, should one assume that that person is, I'm using air quotes now, out to get me, or should one just simply have his or her ears and eyes open for signs of difficulty?
Yeah, I would go with the latter. Be alert. Understand This is how foreign services work, but not every friendly scientist at an international convention is working for a foreign service. Keep your security services well informed. The best way to make it hard for the enemy and, frankly, to protect yourself is to make sure you let your security services know these contacts have taken place, and they might be able to give you more detailed advice, such something along the lines of, yes, we know him. Be careful.
General Hayden, I'm grateful for your time today. Any final thoughts about either the individual employee response, the agency response, not just OPM, but others as they're going through this 30-day cyber sprint, or the government enterprise as a whole, their response to what we've seen over the last several weeks, sir?
I think we've been slow to need, and to be totally candid, Francis, with 40 years of government service, I've been part of that. I think what it is we have to do now is very clear, and we really, really need to get on with it.